Mini episode 669 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Royalty Tours USA, your ultimate resource to traveling in style to attend sporting events. Follow them on the web at royaltytours.blogspot.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 669. It's your favorite football talkers anywhere in the world. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross here in the FDH Lounge. We have broken down the NFL season for you week by week all the way through, and we are now up to the wild card round. And for my little rodeo clown act that I've been doing during the year here, trying to get over 52.4% for the entire year on all the picks, I went 8-8 last week, so I did make it on that. 2-1 on my big three, 1-0 on my lock for the year. 26-25 on my big three, 8-9 on the locks, but 135, 116, and 5 on all plays, putting me at, I believe, 53.7% for the year. So a once-in-a-lifetime feat that will now, I'll be boring people with this when I'm old and gray. And again,
congratulations, Rick Morris. Congratulations,
well,
Rick Morris. That was very impressive to do.
Thank you. Again, I want to compare and contrast that because I've been talking about this the last couple weeks, and I am proud and happy on a personal level that I did it. But, Kyle, again, you finish up another excellent profitable year, 2-4 last week, albeit, but 52-44-2 for the year. I want to say this year in and year out because the name of the game in this thing is making money. And the way that you make money is to consistently finish decently above 52.4%. What I did, I just did it to see, okay, can any dummy, if he studies it enough, you know, manage one fluke year out of his lifetime? Yeah, I proved that much. But Kyle, continuing the unabated winning streak on this show since we first started doing this week by week in 2012. So another excellent profitable year, my friend. You between us, in terms of the pros and the Joes, I am the Joe, you are the pro, and you did what is much more important, having another very, very solid, profitable year for anybody following you.
Well, I thank you for that, but I quite frankly think you're a little more impressive because you pick every game at least. Now, like, as I joked with you over text, I tend to prefer your little 13 over your big three or whatever you want to call it every week because I think you have a little more guts when it comes to the little 13. You always wuss out and, you know, pick some publicly backed road favorite laying two. But you did it this year. You did it. And it's very interesting that both of us could kind of finish, you know, in the same neighborhood, yet we have totally different styles. That's very odd to me. And
yeah.
As we move to the playoffs, we, of course, have three road favorites for you, road favorite Ricky. And as I've said in past years, this is the time of year where I'm a little, you know, more inclined to back a road favorite, you might think, although you'll have to listen on to see who I've got this week. These were very hard games for me to call, as I told you on the phone. And I wrestled with it for like 2 days. I had to get knee-deep in some research to figure out what I was doing. The analytical side of me kind of went in direct contrast to the contrarian betting side of me. So I was really scrambling for 24 hours, but I think I've got this figured out. And unlike the regular season, I will be playing every game this week, just for you, Ricky, and the listeners.
All right. Well, that's good to know. And in terms of putting this out there, again, I'm going to circle back to something I said at the beginning of the year as we start by taking a little bit of an overview of the postseason and our feeling for what we have for it before we get into the four games this weekend. I do feel like my initial sense that I had coming into the year, which, again, was on a fluke. I admit to you, it was on a complete fluke. It was the injury of Jordy Nelson. And I said, you know what, that's the Malcolm Gladwell tipping point. This year, it's going to be a leveling effect. You're not going to have the great Giants that you've had the last couple of years, not the New York Giants, you know what I mean. The team's kind of towering above. You look at who's in the playoffs this year. You look at Denver, who you and I agree is maybe the most vulnerable number one seed of our lifetime, potentially, if you want to go there. In looking at this, I do think it kind of played out the way that I expected. I could not have anticipated the wealth of injuries this year, which I think has been a great leveler as well. The Jordy Nelson thing was just the tip of the iceberg. It got worse week by week by week. It's been an epidemic when you're looking at high-caliber talent in the NFL. But I think you would agree with me, would you not, that you're looking at 11 games in the postseason this year where you've got to be very skeptical of believing very, very strongly in any outcome weeks down the road?
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. Now, in the regular season, we should point out, it was fairly top-heavy, although you usually, if you go through things, at least back, you know, I kind of only now go back to that 0-2 season when they realigned the divisions to the current format of eight divisions, four teams in each, because, you know, that kind of skews things if you go past that when you're looking
right.
for trends. But there were five teams, 12-4 or better, is what I was trying to say there as I lost my train of thought, did ramble.
Sure.
And you usually have that amount, which is fair, but, you know, I thought the league was still kind of top-heavy for the most part.
Oh, okay.
And the chaos theory you talked about wasn't so much of the regular season, but I do, and I thought of you, by the way, midweek before we did this
okay.
program, that it's going to reign supreme here in the playoffs because the last couple of years we've been doing this, you know, it's been the top teams. I think, as a matter of fact, haven't the last two Super Bowls been a matchup of number one seed, if I remember correctly?
Yes.
Yeah, Seattle, Denver, and Seattle, New England. I would be shocked if that happened this year. Now, you referenced Denver on the AFC side. I told you basically the second that they beat San Diego last week that they may be as weak as any number one seed as I can remember. I have them actually the six AFC teams rated fifth in my power rankings, which is pretty shocking. I mean, I can't.
Sure.
I would have to go back to a long time to probably find one. Maybe one of those Atlanta teams that I used to make fun of in the early days of the program was something like that. But, again, I'd have to check. But love this week. Love when we're in the playoffs, though, Ricky, because we actually get a lot of time to talk about these games in our 45 minutes together. We don't have to just kind of breeze through a couple. So we can let our analysis breathe. I played too many games last week. For a week, sixth place for week, you know the degenerate I am. I can't learn my lesson. I'm playing them all this week. I feel if these were regular
mm-hmm.
season games, I don't know if I'd play any of them, though, quite frankly.
Okay.
So,
well, you got faded into that last one by my braggadocio when I was pointing out that I was 22-8 combined
on the
Vikings and the Packers.
That's right.
And you,
that's right.
You sort of went against me just to spite me there, which, again, is never a good motivation. So
no,
you should almost absolve you for that because it's one you shouldn't have done in the first place.
Your analysis was still lousy. Your analysis was still lousy, even though you won.
Yeah,
right,
you were right on
wrong analysis,
not in the outcome.
Yes.
Well, I actually have the breakdown, among other things, of because, again, as I said, I went through this year and charted how I did on each team. So I'm going to have that as part of my analysis to put out there for each game. The last overview thing I want to say for the playoffs before we get started is I think you would agree with me. The last year or two, at least, we've got a couple games the first round, and you and I have been like, why are we talking about these two teams? It's pretty clear they're not going to make it past next weekend, neither one of them. This is a waste of time. I know we felt that way about a couple wild card games the last couple of years. When I'm looking at the chaos theory for this postseason, I don't think we rule out the winner of any of these games getting to at least the conference championship game, do we? Unless maybe if it's a Houston or somebody, but I'm not anticipating that.
I would say Houston and then Washington. It would shock me if
yes.
either of those teams won multiple games. But
that's right.
To your point, unlike some of the past couple of years, we don't have that really awful team that somehow snuck in. You know, as much as people made fun of the NFC East and the AFC South during the regular season, both of the champions finished with 9-7 records, which is okay.
Right.
As a matter of fact, of the 12 teams that made the playoffs this year, they all were in my top 14 in the power rankings. Washington comes up last at 14th and Houston's 12th, but that's not that bad. So, I mean, remember Indianapolis and Luck's rookie year? They were way down there. They had that negative point differential. Last year,
right.
you had Carolina, who had a losing record. Arizona, who had, Drew Stanton at quarterback, or right. something even worse than Drew Stanton. I think it was Ryan Lindley they had started.
Yes.
So, yeah, we don't have that just awful, wretched team in this year's group, and that makes it more interesting.
Well, and it's interesting you mentioned power rankings, because that goes to what I'm going to talk about with every game here as we set it up. I of course, did the power rankings. You can find them in the usual place, the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, the FDHLounge.blogspot.com. But as is now traditional, I also go through after the season and I devise a strength of schedule metric based on adding up the total from the power rankings of all the teams on every team's schedule, and then an impressiveness of victories index that is 50% comprised of points for victories, 50% comprised on strength of schedule. So I'm going to reference that for each of the teams this week, because there's one game
okay.
in particular where there is a striking mismatch, and it may not be a game that you're anticipating, but it's not this one now that we start with, frankly, although there's a little bit of a discrepancy there. It's the 11-5 Chiefs at the 9-7 Texans to start off the postseason, 4:35 Eastern time from NRG Stadium in Houston on ESPN, Tirico, Gruden, and Salters on the call. The Chiefs, in picking their games this year, I was 9-7, 1-0 on my big three. For the Texans, I was 8-8, 1-1 on my big three. Strength of schedule, Chiefs ranked 12th in the league, Texans in a tie for 24th. Impressiveness of victories index, Chiefs were 6th, Texans were tied for 20th. Having said that, if you look at the Chiefs week by week, this is kind of an interesting thing. Their record is almost kind of predictable when you look at the front half of it was sort of more loaded with tough teams. The back end of it, yeah, they beat Denver the 1 week, really kind of blew them out, but didn't have a lot of impressive victories. It's just really interesting that they kind of laid down against the good teams early on, and there were reasons for that, but the record may not be all that it's cracked up to be at 11-5. Going through on this, I had trouble isolating too many other things here, specifically statistically, aside from Houston is pretty good on their discrepancy, 38.6% conversion on third down versus 28.5% defensively. So they're a lot better at the gaining on third downs and stopping teams. They're very good on both, I should say. The matchup is going to be very, very interesting here. Chiefs bringing Justin Houston back into the lineup. Of course, Dwayne Brown out for the year after that big injury last week for the Texans. So you project on that battle in the trenches there that Houston is going to have a tougher time battling this Chiefs defense that, again, is very, very, very good, has even taken a step up from recent years. I go to the quarterback battle, Brian Hoyer versus Alex Smith. Big check mark on that one, I would say, to Alex Smith. And the running game here. Both teams have had to replace their top running backs during the season. The Chiefs, next man up, no matter how far down the depth chart you got to go. For the Texans, Alfred Blue. Yeah, pretty much no matter who you put in there, their running game is mediocre at best. I think the Chiefs are going to be able to keep a much better balance offensively in terms of the run and the pass. I like the Chiefs to cover here. They are laying a pretty solid 3 points as they have been for most of the week. I like the Chiefs outright and, of course, minus the three.
All right. First time I'm going to battle you on something here. Do you have your little screen up with all the lines or no?
I do indeed.
By any chance. Okay. Well, if you go through
The usual place. The usual place, by the way. So if it's wrong, that's why.
No, okay. No, that's right. I actually go to a slightly different place, but I think it has the same sports book. If you go through, you'll see Pinnacle is currently dealing Houston plus 3.5.
I see that, yes.
I think there is, just so all of our listeners are, when they go to, you know, these, there's multiple sites that show all the sports book lines. But there is no sportsbook named Consensus, just so everyone's clear on that. You can't bet at a place called Consensus. So I always try to find a real line. A lot of times I hike 5 dimes on this program, but it's Pinnacle this week that's dealing 3.5. I think that's the hook is significant. I don't need to explain
also,
why.
Also, Bovada. Bovada's
okay,
the
well,
same.
And that's a real square book, too, which is interesting. So they're probably, you know, they're not afraid of people still betting the Chiefs there, I think. The hook is significant.
Okay.
3 is, you know, obviously a very key number in betting football. It's the most common outcome for point differential in a game is 3, set followed by 7, which is, you know, pretty interesting when you look at the college national championship game, but that's a different podcast for a different day, I suppose. I'm on the Texans here as long as you give me plus 3.5.
Okay.
I'll recommend them at plus 3.5 there. And I think more places are going to have them at 3.5 because the juice is real high everywhere at minus 3.
Okay.
Now, it'd be funny if the Kansas City won by 3 because then I could look smart and touting the importance of shopping around for lines. But I do think Houston's got more of a chance here than people are giving them.
Okay.
We have, of all the home dogs, they're the one who, you know, that people are kind of writing off, correct? And by the way, we should mention 3 road favorites this week and, you know, maybe a 4th depending where Green Bay closes. But that's not unprecedented. We actually had 3 road favorites in 09, just so we're clear. We have more of them now because of the weak division winners like
that's
you.
That's right.
But you talked about the Chiefs' record not being as impressive as it may look. And remember, I was a guy on who was touting the Chiefs at the start of the season. I kind of gave up on them when they were 1-5, but they wound up with a better record than I even predicted at the beginning of the season. I said they'd be 10-6 and in the playoffs. They finished 11-5, 10 straight wins. But I can't disagree with you on the point of Alex Smith over Brian Hoyer. But
right.
I'm going to come at you with the defenses. Houston's defense is every bit as good as Kansas City's and maybe better, to be honest with you. They won 7 of 9 down the stretch, the Texans. In 5 of their wins, they only gave up 6 points. They gave up 6 points 5 times, Ricky. Let me repeat that. That's pretty good. And
okay.
With the Chiefs, a team that I watched a lot down the stretch, man, are they dependent on turnovers? Do you know they forced at least one in every game during their 10-game win streak? They forced multiple turnovers in 7 of those games. The 3 they did not, they failed to cover, and that includes the last 2 weeks when they only forced 1 against Oakland, only forced 1 against Cleveland, and they struggled to pull away from those games. I played against the Chiefs, if you remember, a couple times down the stretch, noting that, you know, this isn't a team really built in. Now, 3 points is a relatively small number, 3.5, whatever. You know, I question the red zone issues, and I question them being able to run the ball in this game. Over the last 3 games, Houston's allowed just 112 rushing yards total. They allow just 77 per game for the year here at home, 15.6 points per game at home. As long as Brian Hoyer does not become an interception machine, and that was the problem. These teams played in week 1, and the game was not as close as the final score. It was 27-20 Kansas City, but they led big in the first half. Hoyer got pulled after, like, the first quarter, if you remember.
Yep.
But as long as Hoyer protects the football, and that's going to be key in our next game, too, with the underdog quarterback, I think Houston can absolutely win this game. I'm going to take the Texans plus 3.5.
Interesting. I know that you're somebody that does not tend to put a lot of faith in yardage numbers, but the Chiefs did surrender. I mean, this is practically a dead heat over 16 games, but 26 less yards than the Texans over the course of the year, 1571 to 1597. So I know that's only one metric, but
it's
not a truly reliable one. Pardon?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty close. And that's pretty close. I mean, to me, I would grade that out as a wash. And again, you know, these teams both faced a lot of bad offenses down the stretch. So,
right.
I mean, in the case of both, the numbers may be a little inflated. I just think that you got to respect the home field here with you. I mean, I just don't think Kansas City is 3.5 points better on the road compared to Houston. I just don't. I think Houston's a little bit better than people realize. I know they won a terrible division, but and they had a losing record outside the division at 4-6. But, you know, Kansas City's record outside the division wasn't that great either, necessarily.
Right. Well, you know, and when you look at it here, as I say, the impressiveness of victories index for the Chiefs, them finishing 6th, my metric tends to consider all things being equal. But, again, they're sort of like 6th with an asterisk because, again, they really, again, for an 11-5 team, there was an awful lot of losing to teams as good or better than them and beating up on the Twinkies. There was a lot of that kind of stuff going on. And the Texans, again, especially because of their defense, are not a Twinkie. I don't have a lot of respect for the offense necessarily, Hopkins notwithstanding, who's awesome. But
I should point one thing out, too. Alex Smith is not good at pushing the ball down the field.
Right.
Houston is very good at defending the short passing game, if you look that up.
They
Houston's
are.
Pass defense is really good. I think Kansas City's really going to struggle to move the ball in this game. And ultimately, I mean, the total's really low. I think it's like 40.
Yeah.
In a low-scoring game, I just think, you know, taking the dog is the way to go.
Yeah, and I might even like under the 40, although that's not a recommendation. But, yeah, I could see this being a field goal, field position, kind of a battle with the defenses and with the offenses involved here. We go to the game Saturday night, which looks to be a little more wide open than that. It's the 10-6 Steelers at the 12-4 Bengals, 8:15 Eastern time, Paul Brown Stadium in the Natty on CBS, Nance Wolfson and Sims on the call. I was 9-6-1 picking the Steelers games this year, 2-0 on my big three, 1-0 on my lock picks for the Bengals, 7-9. I think they're the only team where I was under 500 out of all of the playoff teams here. As I'm looking at this, yeah, that apparently is the case. So I was the least successful pick in the Bengals out of any of the teams in the first round here, 1-2 on my big three, 1-1 on my lock picks. Strength of schedule, Steelers 18th, Bengals 19th. Not surprising on that one that they would be close together. On the impressiveness of victories index, Steelers 14th, Bengals 8th. That's basically from the two extra wins against a similar schedule that provided that distance between them there. One of the things I look at, the Steelers are only one of two teams in the postseason that is, well, in the first round anyways, where their time of possession offensively is behind their opposition. So they tended not to have the ball as much as the team. 30-43 to 31-54. They must have played a lot of overtime games, Kyle, to have the numbers that high. You know what I mean? It's unusual to see both of them decently above 30. But I look at that, and that kind of makes me think a little bit. This was the toughest one for me to pick on paper as I went into this. And I indicated to you earlier in the week, I was going to be looking to see if D'Angelo Williams is going to be a go, and I think he was in a walking boot earlier in the week. They're not making any definitive statements, but the entire body language here is that the Steelers are back in Ben Tateville as they were in the first round last year, and you saw what happened against the Ravens. You have two teams that could be very, very, very balanced and very tough to stop defensively because you can't cheat against the run or against the pass. The Steeler passing game right now is pretty lethal, but if you can cheat, which the Bengals can do, because they don't have to respect the run, I think that's going to be the difference. I think that's going to be all the difference in this game. You look at the line, and it's been Pittsburgh started, they opened at 2.5. It got up to 3 in some places. The consensus, if you want to go by that, seems to be back to around 2.5. The Bengals are the road dog that I like in this situation because, again, I think whether it be the run or the pass, and that's what you're going to need to protect A.J. McCarron in this situation is that kind of a balance. I think the Bengals are going to be able to matriculate the football up and down the field by the run and by the pass. The Steelers are fairly susceptible to the pass. A.J. Green has been hot. Brown has been getting all the attention as far as the hot receivers in this game, but A.J. Green's been kind of right there with him. Eifert looks like he's going to be back good to go. I like the Bengals on this one.
Yeah, A.J. Green, I thought, had his best year this year of his career.
Yeah. He was awesome.
Yeah. So I should point out there is one historical trend I wanted to give before all these games because it applied to the last one as well, and this one too. Road favorites in the wild card round of 3.5 points or less are 6-1-1 against the spread, taking all 8 games straight up. So that doesn't make me feel any better about my last pick, and quite frankly, it's not going to make me feel any better about this pick either. I'm with you here on the Bengals.
Okay.
I'm going to buck that 6-1-1 ATS trend. And I, like you, really struggled with this game. Put me down Cincinnati plus 3, by the way. I think this one's going to be 3 almost everywhere.
Okay.
Obviously, Andy Dalton is not going to play. I think that's, you know, we've all come to grips with that. But still, I pretty much agree with everything you said. Now, this spread to me was the one of the four that shocked me the most. How about you? It seems that Pittsburgh's getting a ton of respect here down the stretch.
Right.
I'm not saying that they necessarily don't deserve it, but remember, it was only a couple weeks ago they fell flat on their face in Baltimore. And,
right.
Oh, by the way, this is their third straight game on the road, on the division road, as a matter of fact. So it's not a friendly spot. And using my power rankings, even with McCarron, I would still have Cincinnati favored here. Oh, by the way.
Sure.
So this is what did it for me. Because, first of all, I want to get to this. What's interesting with handicapping this is the road team won both regular season meetings, right?
Right.
And then now the road team's favored. So I was kind of, you know, that was the first thing that kind of got me going on Cincinnati. I'm like, is the road team really going to win all three games in the season series? Now, that would not be without precedent. In 09, the Philadelphia Eagles and New York Giants played three times, and the road team won all three of those games. That was, if you recall, the rubber match there was the one where the Giants no longer had Plaxico Burress, and they kind of fell apart at the end after he shot himself. And then they were the number one seed, and they kind of fell apart, and they lost. They were one and done in the playoffs the year after winning the Super Bowl. But other than that, of the last five times we've had a situation like this where the road team won both regular season meetings, the home team has won the other four of the last five playoff games. But
right.
Bengals fans are not going to want to hear about the sixth time this happened all the way back in 05. When the Steelers came in as a road favorite, you know the game, Ricky, Kimo von Olofsson, and they beat the Bengals, you know. So, you know, the Bengals' history, we should talk about Kansas City's history, by the way, because everyone's going to rip Cincinnati all day Sunday because they're 0-6 in the playoffs under Lewis. Kansas City hasn't won a playoff game since 93. They're 1-10 against the spread their last 11 playoff games, by the
way. Right.
But this is what got me on Cincinnati. Unlike that 0-5 game, the Bengals had the better year-to-date point differential. That was not the case in 05. In 05, and remember, the Steelers went on to win the Super Bowl that year.
Right.
They had a significantly better point differential than Cincinnati, although Cincinnati won the division, as is the case this year. I believe it was plus 131 to plus 71. I mean, that's almost 2-1 difference. That's quite significant. This year, the Bengals outscored opponents by 140 points. Steelers only 104. I looked it up since 03. There have only been two instances where we've had a road favorite that had an inferior year-to-date point differential compared to its home dog brethren. Both times that road favorite did not cover the spread. So I'm on Cincinnati here. I'm on Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And I think they may win the game outright. Pittsburgh's defense, like Kansas City's, predicated on taking the ball away. If McCarron doesn't throw interceptions, and remember that last when they lost to Pittsburgh at home, he came in and threw that early pick six.
Right.
As long as he doesn't do something like that, I see no reason why the Bengals shouldn't win this game. Because they've got a much, much better defense than Pittsburgh, in my opinion. They finished the year second in scoring.
Yeah, far better. And again, in terms of all the things you're talking about there, which I think are all relevant and which I agree with, I think, again, it goes to, and nobody over the past couple of years has dogged the Bengals for being playoff chokers more than me. It goes to their reputation on that, which I've been saying this year I think may not apply anymore. And for Pittsburgh, they just always kind of tend to get more respect from the betting public, it seems like. For Kansas City, as you said, it's a similar stretch, except, you know what, it's been multiple regimes. You can't pin it all on Andy Reid. With Marvin Lewis, it's a little bit more personalized. We go to the Sunday games. Correct. The 10-6 Seahawks are at the 11-5 Vikings, 1 o'clock Eastern time, 10 Pacific time for all the Seahawks fans out there, from TCF Bank Stadium in Minneapolis on NBC, Michael's Collinsworth Tafoya on the call. And I was very successful at picking both of these teams this year, 11-5 on the Seahawks, 2-1 on my big three, 1-0 on my locks, 12-4 for the Vikings, 1-0 on that. Strength of schedule, Seahawks 15th, Vikings 7th. On the impressiveness of victories index, Seahawks 10th, Vikings 3rd. So when you're looking at that, again, it really is a thing where the Vikings, I think, did more than I think we kind of tend to give them credit for, because they tended to look human. If you're looking at the old eye test, I think it's less fair to the Vikings than some of the statistics I just rattled off here. Well, you and I both talk about that, and that the Vikings, again, I'll admit, to the eye, especially offensively, they don't look as good as their record. I'll give you that. But what is impressive for Seattle is their time of possession, 32-14 to 29-51, was their advantage, changing that offense drastically on the fly during the season from Lynch-centered to Wilson passing-centered. And the third down percentage is 46.5% conversion, 34.4% stopping. So the Seahawks, that differential there, that is very, very good. One of the things I'm going to come back to here is the way that they throttled Adrian Peterson the last time around. And we go to this, and I'm a big Teddy Bridgewater guy. I've been a big Viking guy through the year. But the fact that I'm 12-4 on their games means I also knew when to pick against them. And this is going to be one of those spots, because I picked them against the Packers last week, made it my pick because I thought the trenches, that was what I came down to. I thought they would be superior to the Packers in the trenches. They were on both sides of the ball. Here, when you're looking at their defense versus the Seattle offense, they may have an edge, but the Seattle defense is going to have a more prominent advantage against the Minnesota offense. They're going to take Peterson out of the game. Bridgewater, a young guy, can't quite do it himself yet. Seahawks in this game, weighing 4.5. It was 3.5 at the open. It was up as high as 6. But I like the Seahawks here. I struggle with the 4.5 because I don't think it's going to be a blowout like last time. But at the end of the day, if I can't pick the Vikings to win and I can't muster a case, I'm going to go with the Seahawks.
I'm with you, and this is the one I like the least. Well, I'm with you halfway. I'm with you in that I don't think Minnesota's going to win this game. That regular season matchup was telling. Seattle came in, and by the way, that was a 1 o'clock start, so as much as Seattle fans, and I think they have a right to complain, by the way. The scheduling, we should bring this up, Ricky. What's up with the schedule?
Weird. Both
AFC games on one day, and then the NFC games on one day, and you have the
Pacific
team on the road playing early here. You referenced that. That's weird. I don't know what the league thinks sometimes. I know that on Twitter, when the schedule is announced, there are a lot of people up in arms over this. So there's no denying that this is a bad matchup for Minnesota. And I'm one of the guys who is kind of dogging Minnesota most of the year. I'm pleasantly surprised, I'll say, that they were able to finish 11-5. I did not see that coming. They were very trendy coming into the year. And while they largely did just beat the teams that they should beat on their schedule, I think when we go back and look at their year as a whole, you know, you'll find that there was a couple teams they beat who weren't as good as we thought they might be, like Indianapolis and Atlanta. Did they play Indianapolis? Maybe they didn't play Indianapolis. I can't remember.
They played the AFC West.
Well,
that's why their schedule was so tough. They played both Wests, actually.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. Is the AFC West, are those divisions that great? I mean, those, I would say at least 4 of the 8 teams aren't awesome. They were non-playoff teams. But, hey, I'll give the Vikings credit for what they did last week. They actually went on the road and beat a playoff team, something they had never done with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback. Granted, that's only been, you know, a little under 2 years, but still, they had never done it.
Right.
You talk about the line movement here, and it is wild. I mean, it got all the way up to 6 yesterday, and then it immediately came down. So somebody's betting the Vikings here. It's still available at 6 at some places. I don't know what we're going to do here. Well, let me take a look here. What's the best line I can grab here? Because I know that it's still higher than 4.5 at some shops. Hey, this is fair, man.
You're looking for Minnesota minus 7.5 somewhere, ain't you?
Well, minus 7.5. No, thank you. I'm sorry, plus.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get that. I'm going to get 5, though. Can I get 5 here for you with Minnesota? I'm, believe it or not, going to take the Vikings here. I talked earlier about road favorites of 3.5 points or less being 6-1-1 against the spread. Well, Seattle's laying more than 3.5 here, and in fact, they are the third largest road favorite in wild card history, Rick Morris. Do you know who the other two, the two higher than them are? One of them involved Seattle, as a matter of fact. It was the infamous Marshawn Lynch game where, when, you know, they beat New Orleans. They were the largest home dog ever. They were getting 10, believe it or not, when they upset the defending Super Bowl champion Saints in that spot. And then, of course, the year later, you-know-who beat the Pittsburgh Steelers on an overtime touchdown pass of 90 yards.
That's right.
When we were all, you know, by God, when Tim Tebow just captured the hearts of America. So those are the only two times we've seen a road favorite larger than this in the wild card. And I just think that Seattle, and I could make a case that, and by the way, hopefully we have time to go through our, you know, who we think is going to the Super Bowl here at the end of the show. And I guess I'm kind of contradicting myself here because, to be honest with you, I think Seattle's going to win the Super Bowl. I just think that this one's closer than the experts think. I think they're due for a close game. And privately, Ricky, I'm rooting for this to be a close game because if they blow Minnesota out, then there's going to be no line value whatsoever again when they go into Carolina next week, which is a spot I've been targeting and hoping for a long time. I really want Seattle, you know, to be a pick 'em or just getting even a couple points at Carolina next week. So if this one's closer than expected, I'll get better value on that game. I know it's kind of shaky territory, shaky like your territory on the Vikings last week. But I'm going to go with another home dog here. I'm going to go with another home dog.
All right. Well, that makes it interesting. We go to the last game.
I don't know why I keep
repeating
myself either.
I don't know why you keep repeating yourself either. The last game is the 10-6 Packers at the 9-7 Redskins, 4:40 Eastern Time, FedEx Field in Landover on Fox. Buck Aikman, Andrews, Myers, a cast of thousands covering it for Fox. In picking these teams this year, I was 12-4 on picking the Vikings. I went with them in my Big Three 7 times. I was 6-1, 5-0 among my locks. My locks were only 8-9 on the year. But I was 5-0 picking the Packers. I should have picked them every week. The Redskins, I was 9-7. I was 1-1 on my Big Three with them. Strength of schedule, I teased this earlier in the show. Packers, 3rd in the league this year on our metric. Redskins, 29th. Impressiveness of victories index. Packers, 1st. Redskins, 26th. So a real glass jaw by the Redskins here when you're looking at this. And the Packers, for as much as we want to demean them for how they've looked in the second half of the season and justify
that doesn't mean anything.
They've been in there with the heavyweights. Yes, and I've seen this debunked on TV in recent days, and it's true. It's very, very much overrated the way you come into the postseason. Everybody wants to say, oh, OMG, Redskins, all the momentum. Packers look like crap. The Packers have played the heavyweight schedule during the year. The Redskins, most definitively, have not. The Packers, interestingly, though, the other team in the wild card round to be negative on the time of possession index here, 30-09 offensively, 30-51 defensively. So they, with their various offensive issues that they've had this year with trying to replace Jordy Nelson, that has been a real issue. But we talk all about the problems that they have had, the way that this offense, again, the first couple weeks of the season looked like nothing had changed, but that was a mirage as the year has gone along. But I look at this, and again, the Redskins defense, they don't suck. But if you look at it, they win by outscoring the other team. They're not shutting anybody down. This isn't the Chiefs. This isn't the Texans. They win by outscoring the other team. So it's a get-well opportunity for the Packers. And when you look at, again, Kirk Cousins right now, he is doing much better recently than Aaron Rodgers. If that's not the classic regression / progression to the mean opportunity of all time, I don't know what is. Give me the Packers in this one. In most places, they're laying 1 point after it being a pick-em early on. I like the Pack to win this game and shock everybody that said, oh, no, I thought the Redskins had turned a corner.
Yeah, I'm with you. We agree here. I completely agree with everything you just said. Late regular season form, overrated. Washington, overrated. They only played 2 teams that made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
You know how those 2 games went for the Washington football team?
Not so well.
No, they didn't. They were outscored by the Patriots and Carolina, granted 2 of the better teams, by a combined 71-26. So that's not very good. Green Bay's defense a little underrated, I think. Washington's defense, not underrated. I was shocked when I saw this. I looked at it right before we started the show. They gave up over 400 passing yards to Dallas last week.
Right.
I don't know if a lot of that was late when we weren't paying attention anymore to that game, but good Lord. I don't have a ton to add, really, what you said. I think you did a really good job outlining how it's a buy-low opportunity on Green Bay. Now, I'll say this. Green Bay, who was my preseason Super Bowl pick, is not winning the Super Bowl this year. I think their ceiling is a lot lower than we thought it was 2 months ago. As a matter of fact, even if they win here, say they win comfortably, it doesn't change my opinion that they're not winning the next round. But, as a matter of fact, I'd argue they're the third-worst team in the playoffs, only Houston and Washington are worse. But
right.
They'll win here. They'll win here. It's one of those things that a team that made the playoffs the previous year against a team that didn't. I wonder if when we start talking about next year in future mini-episodes, if we're going to have a little battle on Washington, because I don't like this team for next year. I think that they're going to be one of the bigger disappointments in the league. I think they really kind of came in through the back door while the rest of their division was just in utter turmoil. So give me the pack.
I think the talent on the roster is improving. I think they're in a better place with their talent acquisition right now than the other teams in the division, aside from possibly Dallas.
Yeah, no, they're doing it right.
Yeah, they're doing it right.
They're doing it right, but I just think they're a clear plexiglass principle team. They went from 4 wins to 9 wins. They're not going to win 9 next year.
I would tend to agree when you look at that. When you look at the teams that won't make the playoffs, yeah, they and Houston are among the more vulnerable teams in that regard.
See, that's why I kind of like Houston. I should talk about that. I think Houston is more likely to be back in the playoffs next year than Kansas City, believe it or not. That actually was a contributing factor in making that play. I think Minnesota is a team that's going to fall off next year, too. I think you and I maybe we won't disagree on Washington, but Minnesota, maybe we will, and I think Oakland, maybe we will.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Last week with Oakland.
You know who had the hardest schedule in the league on my index was the Bears. So I think the Bears may be positioned to make a move next year potentially, and that could be at Minnesota's expense. The games you like this week, you like Houston, Natty, Minnesota, and Green Bay. I like Green Bay, Seattle, Natty, Kansas City. Looking ahead here, you wanted to make picks for going further.
Yeah.
I'm going to say in the NFC Championship game, believe it or not, Seattle over Arizona. I don't even have Carolina making it that far. Here's a hint the next week. Carolina was 32nd in the league, dead last on strength of schedule. So think about that. Chew that over. But that was where they came out in the metrics, 32nd. You talk about the last draw. Seattle over Arizona. In the AFC, I desperately want to say, because I think Dalton is going to be back for a second game, I want to say Cincinnati over Kansas City in the AFC Championship game, but I don't have the balls. I'm going to say New England over Kansas City on that. And Seattle avenging their Super Bowl loss to the New England Patriots in Super Bowl 50. What will be the biggest Super Bowl ever if that's the case?
Yes, it would be. Holy crap, do we agree on kind of a lot. I'm with you with
Seattle
over Arizona in the NFC Championship game. I am salivating at the opportunity of playing Seattle against Carolina next week, as I spoke of a few moments ago. In the AFC, I really want to play against Denver next week, too. But I think, unlike you, that they may luck out and draw Houston next week.
Okay.
So they're not losing to Houston at home. I'm going to wind up going with, this is a real wussy pick, but I'm going to go with it, New England over Denver in the AFC Championship game.
Okay.
And then, like you, Super Bowl rematch, Super Bowl revenge, Seattle over New England. I think you could make a case that coming into the playoffs, the top three teams are all out of the NFC, by the way, Seattle, Arizona, Carolina.
I kind of agree with that. And, again, Seattle and Arizona, you and I will be doing a lot of channel surfing back and forth as the WWE has the horrible sense to put that up against the Royal Rumble up against the NFC Championship game this year. So a lot of us will be having to suffer through that as the game is going along. But two things at once there. That's right up there with the New Year's Eve college football playoff decision vis-a-vis programming.
Oh,
but, Kyle, another great week here on the show. Look forward to watching the games this weekend, being back with you next week. Thanks, as always, my friend. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 669.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.